I grew up out in the country, spreading my wings wild and free, learning about life from Mother Nature, doing what comes naturally. Two little boys, 8 years old, cousins on my daddy's side. Me and Bobby Wayne, friends from birth, playing out in the woods. Bobby Wayne looks at me right in the eye, smiles a crooked smile and says, wanna do what our mamas and daddies do. Somehow I knew just what he meant, 'cause we were out in the country, spreading our wings wild and free, learning about life from Mother Nature, doing what comes naturally.
This is Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and tonight I'm bringing you part one of a special three-part series on gay country music. This month and next, I'll explore the history of gay and lesbian artists performing openly gay country songs, and also the early country songs by straight artists that have made references to homosexuality. And on a special bonus show, I'll cover country comedy or novelty songs that have gay subject matter. Those have been done almost always by straight artists, and many were borderline homophobic. I open the show with what I consider to be the first openly gay country song to achieve any kind of national attention, and it almost has an anthem feel to it. That was Doug Stevens in the Out Band doing the title track from his debut album, Out in the Country. That was from 1993, and ever since, Doug has been one of the leading forces in that genre. We'll hear more from him later in the show, including some interview comments. But he didn't have the first openly gay country album. I'll tell you who did in a few minutes. But first, I want to give you some examples of some very early gay references in country music. And some of them, I'm sure, seem much more gay then than they do now. In 1939, Vernon Dalhart recorded on the Bluebird label the song Lavender Cowboy. Now, while he wasn't the first to record it, his version was one of the earliest, and it got a lot of attention because it was decided that the song appeared to refer to homosexuality. So radio considered it a blues song and banned it from the air. Even by today's crazed FCC standards, I think you'll agree the song now appears fairly innocent.
He was only a lavender cowboy. The hairs on his chest were few. But he wished to follow the heroes and fight like the he-men do. But he was inwardly troubled by a dream that gave him no rest. That he'd go with heroes in action with only two hairs on his chest. Herbicide and many hair tonics were rubbed in on him each night. But still, when he looked in the mirror, no new hairs were ever in sight. Undaunted, he wandered out to fight, just like an old-time knight errant, doing combat for the right. Battled for Red Nellie's honor and cleaned out a hold-up nest. He died with his 6 guns a-smoking with only 2 hairs on his chest.
Again, that was Lavender Cowboy by Vernon Dalhart from 1939, and his was just one of the many recordings of that song. Burl Ives had perhaps the best-known version, but in 1959, the song turned decidedly homophobic in the hands of English singer Patty Roberts.
Yippee-yi, yippee-yo, yippee-yi, yippee-yo, yippee-yay. Which sounds rather silly, but every hillbilly spends half his life singing that way. He was just a lavender cowboy, with only three hairs on his chest. And he rode on a filly called Daffy-Down-Dilly, the prettiest horse in the West. Every morning they went out together, while the others looked on in dismay. 'Cause he'd round up the cattle a-ridin' side saddle, because he preferred it that way. He was just a lavender cowboy who committed a terrible sin. He went out on a bender and slugged a bartender and stole all the strawberry gin. So the posse was sent out to find him and bring him back dead or alive. And they knew as they went they were hot on the scent by the smell of Chanel No. 5. And they found him a lying unconscious, with blood running all down his chin, till they looked a bit closer, and what do you know, sir, they found it was strawberry gin. So they shot the lavender cowboy, and said as they laid him to rest, "You'll be happier now, boy, you can't be a cowboy with only three hairs on your chest."
Well, this time, because the cowboy wasn't masculine enough, they shot him. Also from the 50s was another condemnation in the form of Billy Briggs' The Sissy Song.
When I get sissy enough to wear a mustache and a bow tie, wear those pretty suede shoes that a lot of those sissies buy, smoke cigarettes and drink iced tea and hold my little finger up high, I'll go out behind the old red barn and let a gray mule kick my brains out. When I get sissy enough to wear that gum old wristwatch and sleep in pajamas and drink sweet milk, you'll know I'm on my last notch. When I get sissy enough to go with my shirt tail hanging out, I'll go out behind the old red barn, let a gray mule kick my brains out. When I get sissy enough to say...
Billy Briggs from 1951, and obviously that was just a little bit of that song. To cover as much ground as possible, I'm only going to be able to play clips of many of the songs. Now, I want to quickly cover a couple of what I term accidentally gay songs, as they were sung by males, but I believe intended to be sung by women. And in those days, society didn't seem to dwell on that. From 1926, Kelly Harrell and Beneath the Weeping Willow Tree, followed by bluegrass greats the Monroe Brothers.
My heart is sad and I am lonely, for the one I love is gone. He's gone to seek another. He no longer cares for me. Then he told me that he loved me dearly, but those words have proved untrue. He's gone to seek another. Oh, my Lord, what will I do?
Oh, where is my sailor boy? Oh, where is my sailor boy? He sleeps in the bottom of the deep blue sea and can't come back to me. On the beach alone and gaze at the misty blue deep sea, as you hold him to your breast, does he mention my name to you? Oh, what does the deep sea say? does a DC say? It moans, it groans, though it splashes and foams and rolls on its weary way.
The Monroe Brothers followed Kelly Harrell with Where Is My Sailor Boy from 1936. And before I leave the Straight Artists, I've got one more that I think is kind of interesting, because it's from quite a bit later, from 1948, and I wouldn't expect a man singing a woman's song then. But here's Cowboy Jack Derrick with a bit of his Truck Driving Man.
When my truck driving man comes back to town, there'll be no loser hanging around. We'll drink beer from a can while I'm with that man. When my truck driving man comes back to town, Chevrolet, Chevrolet, full ass hill. Here and your motor is a thrill. Till the day that you get back, I'll stay on the right track. Till my truck driving man comes back to town.
Again, that was Cowboy Jack Derrick. Oh, and in your travels, you might see mention of the songs A Gay Ranchero or The Gay Caballero by folks like Gene Autry or the Sons of the Pioneers. Sorry, not gay songs. Okay, as I promised earlier, I'm going to tell you about the first openly gay country album. It was called Lavender Country and was released in 1973. The album was made possible by the efforts of Gay Community Social Services of Seattle, and only 1,000 copies were pressed. Founder of the band Lavender Country was Patrick Haggerty. Before we talk to him, I want to share a little of the first track from that album, called Come Out Singing.
Waking up to say hip hip hooray, I'm glad I'm gay. Can't repress my happiness ever since I tried your way. Gonna lay right here and greet the sun, 'cause gay time loving's just begun. So come on, let's tumble in the hay. Do-de-do, oh do-de-do. Morning time feels so fine when I'm hanging out with you. Sun is up, I'm flinging out the night of doubt and bringing about the light to come out singing do-de-do.
How did the band Lavender Country get started?
I formed Lavender Country. I was pretty rabid gay liberationist in the early 70s when Stonewall hit. And I was quite involved in the Seattle movement at the time. And I was singing a little bit then at coffee houses and writing some songs. And I located the musicians for Lavender Country, and we rehearsed, made the album, and kept an independent community project. And we managed to sell 1,000 copies of the original, 33 and a third vinyl record.
Who else was in the band?
A man named Michael Carr, who's still a prominently active Jewish homosexual activist, and he lives in Philadelphia now with his longtime partner. A woman named Eve Morris, who was an out lesbian at the time. Eve was from Milwaukee, and I believe she's in Florida these days, but she spent many years in Seattle, and she is the female vocalist and the fiddle player. And there was a guy named Bob Hammerstrom, who was not gay, but a lovely, lovely human being, and a very good guitarist, and I ran into him, and he was our lead guitar player. So that's how it all came together. Three of us were gay, and Bob Hammerstrom was not gay.
And how did the album actually get produced?
We produced it ourselves here in Seattle. We raised the money through community efforts to produce it. An organization called Gay Community Social Services, which is a private 501c3 nonprofit organization, grew up at about that same time that Lavender Country was being produced.
From the back of the album, it sounds like it was one of that organization's projects, but really, it's from what you're saying, it was closer knit than that.
At the time, it was, yeah. There was a closer hookup than it just being one of the projects. I believe Lavender Country may have been the first, if not one of the first, gay community social service projects. But there have been many over the years.
And how many copies of the album were there?
1,000.
And how long did the band, as it was, last?
More than 2, but probably not 3 years, something like that.
Uh-huh.
We ran up and down the coast doing gay prides here and there, and Washington and Oregon and California, and there were some gay symposiums were a big deal at the time, you know, educational symposiums.
Mm-hmm.
We played a lot at those and at various gay community events. But of course, gay country music was an absurd proposition.
Right.
At the time, for particularly if you thought you were going to make a living at it.
So, were you aware of any other openly gay acts performing at that time?
I was, but not in Seattle. Lavender Jane Loves Women, Alex Dobkin.
Mm-hmm.
Lavender Jane Loves Women came out just months after Lavender Country. Lavender Country was produced first, but Lavender Jane Loves Women was probably even not a year behind.
You're right. That's what I was figuring. I've interviewed Alex.
Uh-huh. Or along about the same time. Meg Christian was around about then, and some other feminist-oriented women were producing music then. There was a man whose name escapes me right now, but I would sure recognize it if I heard it, who produced some gay music just a year or two after Lavender Country. It wasn't country music.
Stephen Grossman?
Yes, that's exactly who I mean.
Mm-hmm. His album came out in 74.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I never met him. I would have liked to have met him. But I appreciated his album very much. It was a good album. So there was me and Stephen Grossman and Meg Christian and Alex Jobkin were really pioneers of the same era.
The sort of cartoonish drawing on the back, is that supposed to be you?
No, it's not supposed to be me. It's not supposed to be me. Michael Carr did the drawing. Michael Carr, the piano player.
Oh, for those on the radio, it's just a weather restaurant-looking man in front of a door that looks like it's hammered shut.
Uh-huh. He's coming out of the closet. Is the idea on that. And well, he's got those Farmer Brown bib overalls, doesn't he?
Right.
Yeah.
Looks like he has a purse.
Yeah, he does have a purse and a carbine rifle trimmed with lace.
Right, yes.
Which is from one of my songs, Back in the Closet Again. Every purse was filled with mace, carbine rifles trimmed with lace.
Okay, I wanted to get to some of the songs. While we're at it, tell me about the song Back in the Closet Again.
Not only was I doing the gay movement at the time, but I was doing the left-oriented movement in general. And I was working in a coffee house that was a war resistors coffee house for Vietnam vets and Vietnam soldiers and that kind of thing. And I was hooked up with other radical organizations that weren't gay. And in those early days, a lot of them had a lot of trouble embracing the gay movement, and many of them were opposed to the gay movement. And there was a big to-do about whether homosexuals could be revolutionary. And the struggles around that got pretty intense, frankly.
So this was really the other revolutionary folks wanting the gays back in the closet.
Right. That's what it was about.
I'm back in the closet again, back where I ain't got a friend. Oh, I have to piss and moan because I'm sitting all alone, back in the closet again. So a bit tired, yeah, it's sure a bummer being gay.
a battalion of gay men brought up the rear. Packing two grenades in each his ear. Every verse was filled with mates, carbine rifles trimmed with lace. Them campy gay gorillas knew no fear.
Well, one song that I have to be careful when I play or introduce is Crying These Cocksucking Tears.
Oh, yeah, that's the one. Again, Crying These Cocksucking Tears is not even a song that's about sex. The song title is, of course, very controversial. That's what Crying These Cocksucking Tears is about. It's about the rigid sex role that men were educated and trained to assume, and how that role was oppressive to women and to us, and how it needed to go. It's a pretty overtly political song.
Well, I can air this portion of the interview on my internet only part of the show.
Okay. Yeah. It's the song that everybody notices first because of the title. But again, it's not an explicitly sexual song at all.
I'm fighting for when there won't be no straight men, 'cause you all have a common disease. Can't give very much for loving and such, but you take it wherever you please. Your rap story, you tell me the glorious Galahad gallop is near. But your lies can't deceive me, and know that you'll leave me crying these cocksucking tears. But now you have guessed that I'm not too impressed with your talents as an engineer. You build up your steeple and you ribbon more people to keep it erect. Mama's gun wiping your rear.
Well, you made it all quite well, but I won't spend my life, sir, for I'm these cocksucking tears.
Looks like your enjoyment went on unemployment. There you are with your rose begging you. So you lost all your magic. You think that it's tragic. No one will come cry for you. Well, your sexism's a broken record, record, record. Been screeching for 10,000 years.
When the battle's begun, sir, I tell you I'm done, so we're crying these cocksucking tears.
The battle's begun, sir, I tell you. Done, sir. Crying these cocksucking tears.
Back the original group when y'all performed live, what song got the best reaction from the crowd?
Well, the unmentionable song.
Okay, we know which one that is.
Was very popular. And it wasn't popular because of the title, although people did enjoy the title. it was popular because of what it was saying. Come Out Singing and Lavender Country were also favorites. Back in the Closet Again was usually requested. You know, it's hard to pick. They were all loved.
How about the song Lavender Country?
Lavender Country was the last song that I wrote and turned out to be the title song of the album. And I particularly like Lavender Country because it's about being liberated from sex roles. It's sort of the opposite of the Cryonese Cocksuck and Tears song, and it's written in a positive, upbeat, light, lyrical style, as opposed to sardonic, sarcastic, biting, acrid style of the other song. And it's an expose about sex roles. Interestingly, in the original Lavender Country, there's not a verse about lesbians. And in later editions of Lavender Country material, and whenever I sing the song now, there is a verse about lesbians. That was an interesting part of the early struggle, too. That was about whether men, gay men in particular, or men in general, had the right to write anything or say anything at all about lesbians, whether it was presumptuous to presume that you could speak about the issue if you weren't a lesbian, particularly if you were a man. And I was intimidated out of, not overtly, but just by smelling the political content of the day, I was intimidated out of writing a verse about lesbians in the original Lavender Country. But I subsequently got beat up by a lot of lesbians for a lot of reasons over the years, and I came to feel not intimidated. And also the sharpness of the issue was blunted a lot over time, and it didn't matter so much what gender you were or what sexual orientation you were when you spoke or wrote about lesbianism. It mattered a whole lot more what you said.
There's nothing left but holes in your weary sexist roles. Time to trade them old PJs for a Goodwill negligee. Y'all come out, my dears, to Lavender Country. Y'all come out and make yourselves to home. It don't matter here who you love or what you wear, 'cause we don't care who's got what chromosome. It don't matter here who you love or what you wear, 'cause we don't care who's got what chromosome.
So you kind of disappeared musically for a number of years.
I did. And the reason for that was, as I said, I wasn't a trained musician. Country was my genre. It was the genre that I loved. It was the only genre that I knew. And getting anywhere at the time in gay country was pretty much an absurd proposition. And I wasn't willing to... I was a gay activist. I wasn't willing to go back in the closet to do country, straight country. It was just a compromise I wasn't willing to make. And so there was nowhere for me to go. And so I went on into the rest of my life.
Well, it turns out that Patrick Haggerty didn't disappear musically after all. And we'll pick up his story a little later. This is a good time to invite you to check out my website at www.queermusicheritage.com. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Saturday night from midnight to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. On tonight's show, I'm trying to be fairly liberal and inclusive as to what qualifies as country music, but then that genre has always covered a lot of territory. A year after Patrick Haggerty's Lavender Country album came out, a rather odd underground album was released. Most people were not, and probably still aren't, sure what to make of Peter Grunzian's album called The Unicorn. It's been called psychedelic folk country, and was definitely a do-it-yourself project. Imagine music coming out of Greenwich Village and influenced by Johnny Cash and early Bob Dylan. Here's a bit of Peter Grunzian and his song, White Trash Hillbilly Trick.
White Trash Hillbilly Trick. They've been into you for years, baby, years. Love those patches on your britches. Love your long hair parted in the middle. And I love the way you dance. You're looking for a love of it. I love you in the faded blue jeans. Trash hillbilly trick, and they've been into you for years.
Some may notice that most of the artists featured on this first show are male. Well, that's what my research indicated. I found no openly lesbian country artists in the early years, and the earliest female group I can mention definitely was not out. In 1975, a trio of seasoned musicians, Helen Hook, Pamela Brandt, and Ann Bowen, formed the group Deadly Nightshade. I've read that their live act demonstrated more of a country feel, but their two albums, Deadly Nightshade and FNW, standing for Funky and Rustrin, were to my ears all over the map musically. But here's one of their more country-flavored songs, Someone Down in Nashville.
On the road and far from those you love, when the loneliness can fit just like a glove. All those thoughts you got so many of. Well, you don't have to buy a ticket home or spend your last $5 on the phone. 'Cause folks in Opry Land, they really understand. They got feelings just like your own.
That was the group Deadly Nightshade. In 1979, Robin Flower released her debut album, but her lesbian music credentials go back 10 years sooner, as she sang backup on the very first openly lesbian 45 RPM record, Maxine Feldman's Angry Athos. As a musician, Robin is very well respected and is a master of just about any stringed instrument you can name. In recent years, she's been half of a duo, on and off stage, with Libby McLaren. But here's the title track from Robin's first album, More Than Friends.
Hey, 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 more than friends, more than friends, more than friends. And pausing for an open door and sad to see her face. Her eyes are full of wisdom and her hair a silky lace. She has a bulldog's courage and she has a simple grace. She's sturdy as an old pine tree, she's one I can't replace. Oh, how I love her. She's my oldest friend. She's a warm glow in the evening when the day comes to an end. She's sweeter than the mountain flower, blooming once again. By the way we love each other, you can tell we're more than friends.
When I featured Blackberry on one of my early Queer Music Heritage shows, I was almost surprised to find a very country song on his album, because he's generally thought of as a folk artist. In this song, he asked Tony to help him to forget.
Tony, I'm glad you're with me. We will have a pleasant time. And as I hold you in my arms, his face goes through my mind. Your skin so brown, so beautiful. eyes are smiling brightly. I can feel your spirit being free. I remember his eyes once smiled for me. So now I try to fantasize that he and I never met. Oh, I'm trying hard, so awfully hard.
The next two artists will only be heard on the internet version of this show, and you'll soon see why. Primarily a folk artist, Harry Wingfield released a 45 RPM record in 1981, with one side of it being a song about restroom entrapment called The Men's Room.
I was shopping to buy a new suit of clothes in a large Topanga department store when I unmistakably felt Mother Nature's call. I was told to look behind women's hose. That is where I found the door that led me straight to my downfall. In the men's room, in the men's room. Why them guys all staring at me in the men's room? Why them guys all staring at me? All I wanted to do was pee in the men's room. In a men's room, one of them smiled and said, "Hi, guy." Another one just said, "My, oh, my." A third one asked if I came in here often. When I got my zipper in my fingertips, they all started to lick their lips. And that is when my knees began to soften. In the men's room, in the men's room. Why them guys all smiling at me in the men's room? Why them guys all smiling at me? All I wanted to do was pee in the men's room. In the men's room. Well, I clenched my teeth and I pulled it out. And they all started to scream and shout. A blonde guy smiled and said I was the best. Well, with all that attention, little Herman got hard. That's when the blonde guy pulled out a card that said police, and he put me under arrest. In the men's room. In the men's room. Now why them guys arresting me in the men's room? Why them guys arresting me? All I wanted to do was pee in the men's room. In a men's room. Well, the Daily News put it on the very front page. My name, address, occupation, and age. The judge dismissed the case and set me free. But I lost my job. I lost my wife. Ruined my reputation and changed my life. And the worst of it is, I never got to pee in the men's room.
In the men's room.
In the men's room.
In the men's room.
That's the way it happened to me in the men's room.
In the men's room.
All I wanted to do was pee. And now they've made a criminal out of me in the men's room.
In the men's room.
In the men's room. In the men's room. Judge in the men's room. The judge agreed I was the best and asked to take me to Key West in the men's room. In the men's room.
I smell the rush that's in the air. That stuff is everywhere. So get your ass on over here. Now start begging for your share. Well, first I'll warm your buns and crack. and shoot my load off on your back. Sure, this stud's in style and here to stay. Loving's just an inch away. For a lifetime or a night, well, I'll make you scream with such delight. But just widen your stance, but here it comes. You need it bad, take all you want. The night is filled with fucking sound, and bodies melting to the ground. Slowly move your hips that way. No love is just an inch away. Love is just an inch away. The night is filled with fucking sound. Is melting to the ground. Slowly move your hips that way. Love is just an inch away. For a lifetime or a night, well, I'll make you scream with such delight. Well, just widen your stance, cause here it comes. Well, you need it fast, so take all you want. Night is filled with fucking sounds, and the body's melting to the ground. Just slowly move your hips that way. Love is just an inch away. Love is just an inch away. Yeah, here it comes. Yeah. Do it. Yeah.
And After Harry Wingfield was the title track from a cassette recording issued in 1983 by an artist called, at least on the tape, Romulus. Besides the song Love Is Just an Inch Away, the tape included graphic songs in a variety of styles, with country being the style most used. Last summer I did a special internet-only show called I'll Be FCCing You. And if you listen to that show, you can hear in entirety several of the almost X-rated gay country songs that I can't include on this show. K.D. Lang came out of the closet in 1992, after years of trying for acceptance in the country market. Those years produced four acclaimed albums, and her first, from 1984, was called A Truly Western Experience. On that album, she did a cover version of a 50s rockabilly hit by Ronnie Self. It's called Bopalina, and she kept those pronouns intact. Okay, you're right. I can't let that be the only song to represent her on this show. From the gorgeous Shadowland album from 1988, here's a bit of I'm Down to My Last Cigarette.
The coffee's all gone. Told me you'd call me, but you haven't yet, and I'm down to my last cigarette. I'm down to my last cigarette, for I know what makes
Katie Lang. In 1986, one of my favorite queer acts, Romanowski and Phillips, added a very country song to their album called Trouble in Paradise. It's the Larry Havlock song, Must Have Been Drunk.
I woke up in the morning with you wrapped inside my arms. Last night the tent got cold, so we just snuggled to keep warm. I must admit that you had started feeling pretty good, and I was feeling you a little better than I should. Must have been drunk for us to carry on this way. You don't talk like Mr. Rogers, I don't look like Doris Day. Now maybe it's the wine and weed that made us act so queer, or maybe homosexuals have bottled up this beer.
Okay, somewhere I've got to fit in Glenn Meadmore. And his work again begs the question of just what qualifies as country music. I've got all five of his releases spanning back to 1987, and I guess I'm comfortable calling his albums country punk. He obviously is not worried about airplay, as this material fits the titles of his releases, the last three being called Boned, Hot Horny and Born Again, and Cowboy Songs for Little Hustlers. Many of his songs are openly gay and openly graphic. I picked one from his Squaw Bread album from 1988 called I'll Teach You to Steal My Man. Its verses are very repetitive, and here's the one I can play on the air.
Well, I was in the barn late one night and caught her with my man. I was in the barn late one night and caught her with my man. I was in the barn late one night and caught her with my man. You turn him loose, you alley cat, I'll teach you to steal my man.
And that was Glenn Meadmore. And it would be hard to leave out this song by Two Nice Girls. Now that's the name of their act, and there were four of them. This song was not at all typical of their sound, but they had a big success with it. And how could you miss with a lesbian song called I Spent My Last $10 on Birth Control and Beer?
When I was a young girl like normal girls do, I looked to a woman's love to help get me through. I never needed any more than a feminine touch. I hated the thought of kissing a man, it really was too much. I did not drink, I did not smoke, I did not say goddamn. I was polite, I was sensitive before I loved a man. My family, they were proud of me. Last $10 on birth control and beer. My life was so much simpler when I was sober and queer. But the love of a strong, hairy man has turned my head, I fear, and made me spend my last $10 on birth control and beer.
Again, that was by Two Nice Girls from their self-titled album from 1989. Also from 1989 is a very obscure album by Jane Howard called Passage. I only have one song from the album, but it's a very nice, openly lesbian country song called Something for Her.
Well, there's just something about her, and I think I knew right from the start. And the way that my life feels without her tells me what it is. Least in part, 'cause there's just something about her. Though she's not like some movie queen, well, she's a down-to-earth working class Madonna. In her worn-out running shoes and faded jeans, and it's not the way she looks, but the way she looks at me. And anyway, what do you say to a woman who says it's meant to be? And our dreams, well, you can all but see them just over there. Is something about her, what it is I can't quite say. It's how the sun comes on lazy Sunday morning, how a harbor light cuts through life's darkest day.
At this point in the show, there were several other acts I considered including who were active in the late 80s or early 90s and who were very popular at the women's music festivals, such as Ranch Romance and the Real World String Band, or I could even play a very country song from the album Country Blessed by Chris Williamson and Trett Furr. But those recordings' lyrics were not openly lesbian. And if you've listened to my shows at all, you know I always prefer to give exposure to a lyrically gay or lesbian song. For this next act, well, I really can't tell you much about them. I found their 1994 cassette in a gay bookstore, and there's no photo, but they were from Madison, Wisconsin. They were called the Cowgirl Sweethearts, and their album was The Cowgirl Collection. It was filled with seven mostly out-of-the-closet songs, including this one, titled You Got Me All Wrong. That was the Cowgirl Sweethearts.
There is a street and a place in New York City where I like to go when I'm in town. The women there are strong and the men are so pretty. Chelsea boys in jeans and village men in leather pants. From Christopher to Castro, cities, towns, and back roads. From Mexico to Maine, I sang my songs to mother. hustle boys at Pride, the Cajun Queens and Dixie Dykes, and them cowboys at the gay rodeo.
Most of the rest of this show will be devoted to one of the leading forces in gay country music, Doug Stevens. And that was part of his song from 2000, From Christopher to Castro. I opened the show with a title track from the first album by Doug Stevens and the Out Band, called Out in the Country. And I told you that Doug didn't have the first openly gay country album, with that honor going to Patrick Haggerty and Lavender Country in 1973. Well, to my mind, Doug Stevens had the second openly gay country album. And I was kind of surprised to realize that, as there was a 20-year gap between those two recordings. Of all the other gay and lesbian artists I played, plus a few others I know who released albums between 1973 and 1993, well, I just don't consider them to be both openly gay and fully country albums. So I salute Doug for finally bringing gay country music back out of the closet. While growing up very country, deep in Mississippi, his music career went a different direction at first, and he pursued classical singing in New York City, which included European tours and acclaim. But testing positive for HIV in 1991 turned him around. His lover at the time left him because of it, resulting in a deep despair. I asked him about that time in his life.
My partner and I, and at that time he was my second partner, this was in the late 80s, he and I both got tested for HIV, and he was negative and I was positive. And he left me because of it, and I went into a depression. And this was actually 1990, so there really wasn't a lot of hope for people with HIV back then. And I got really depressed, and classical music felt foreign to me. It started feeling foreign. It didn't feel like it was really me. And so I stopped performing classical music, and I even turned down some gigs.
I thought he was special, a match made in heaven.
Really depressed, and then one day I was sitting in the laundromat doing my clothes, and I thought to myself, I have to get out of this depression somehow. And for some reason I thought of an interview that I had seen on TV with Tammy Wynette a long time ago when I was a little boy. And she said that she implied that writing songs was like therapy for her. It really helped her feel better. So I decided I would see what would happen if I tried to write a song. And I wrote a song, and it was a country song. I didn't intend for it to be a country song. It just came out that way. And it felt really good. It made me feel a lot better. So I wrote another one and another one and another one, and pretty soon I was feeling a lot better. And then I started going to some country western dances. This was 1991 now, in the fall. And I started going to some gay country western dances and clubs, and I realized there was no gay country band out there, so I thought I would form one. And so I formed the Out Band, we made our first recording in 1993 in March, I think, is when it was made. And the guy that I was dating at that time, his name was Nick De La Rosa, he's from Texas, and he suggested actually the name for the album. He said it should be called Out in the Country. And then I thought, well, I should write a song called Out in the Country too then. So I wrote the title song at his suggestion.
The Out Band released three albums during the 90s. Their second, in 1995, was called When Love is Right. From it, I asked Doug to tell me about the song Hang Your Clothes in the Closet.
Well, you know, when Nick suggested Out in the Country as the album, as the name of the album, and then I thought, I need to write a song about this. I said, Nick, that was such a great idea. Give me some more ideas for songs. And he said, what about Hang Your Clothes in the Closet and Wear Yourself with Pride? And I thought to myself,
wow. Said,
that's too many words. But he kept after me. When are you going to write that song? When are you going to write that song? So finally, you know, one day I was in the subway in New York going somewhere, and I pulled out my notebook and thought, I'm going to write this song right now. So I did.
Hey friends, brothers and sisters, I'm gonna tell you right now how to organize your life. Hangers and coats go in the closet. Don't keep your soul cooped up with mothballs in the dark. Sometimes things get lost in the closet. Your favorite things you may never see again. And then one day at last when you find it, it don't fit no more and it's falling apart at the seams. Hang your clothes in the closet and wear yourself with pride. It's that creative, social, and artistic side. Quit moping around and have some fun. Have yourself out the warm June sun. Hang your clothes in the closet and wear yourself with pride.
In 1998, he helped found LGCMA, the Lesbian and Gay Country Music Association, and that organization is working to provide networking and encouragement for LGBT country singers, songwriters, dancers, and basically anyone interested in the music. And what a great idea! It means of bringing together gay country artists and gay country fans. And the group also interacts with the Gay Rodeo, Gay Dance Club, and Square Dance Club associations. Here's the plug. You can find out what artists are members at lgcma.com. Now there's some nice symmetry to the history I'm presenting of gay country music, because the pioneer, Patrick Haggerty, is now part of Doug Stevens' band. I asked Doug how he met Patrick.
Well, when I lived in New York and my band was touring around, we played in St. Louis once at a gay pride event. And a woman there, Chris Dickinson, she wrote for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And she did a couple of articles about the band with pictures. And she was very interested in the Out Band and the whole phenomenon of gay country music. Of course, that was 1996, before LGCMA got started. But in 1998, I was living in, I was living in Oakland then, across the bay from San Francisco. And one night, Chris Dickinson called me and said that she was now the editor for the Journal of Country Music for the Country Music Hall of Fame. And she wanted to do an article, an in-depth article about gay country musicians. And she said she wanted to interview me, and she wondered if I knew any other gay country musicians. And we had just formed LGCMA, so she was very interested in writing about LGCMA, and so she did. Basically, the article was mostly about me and Charlie Pacheco and David Allen Morse and Mark Weigel. But she also asked me during the interview if I had heard of an album called Lavender Country. And I told her I had. I had always thought, when I first formed the band, that ours was the first gay country band. But my drummer at the time, Richard Dworkin, told me, no, we weren't the first. And he had an album called Lavender Country, and which was from the early 70s, and he played it for me. And he told me he didn't know if you know, Patrick was still around or how to get a hold of him or anything. So, anyway, Chris asked me if I had heard, during that interview, she asked me if I had heard of Patrick Haggerty, and I told her I had, and she got a hold of him, and she wrote a lot about him in that article. The article, I would say that primarily the article was about him, Patrick, and Lavender Country, and the first album that they made, and the only album that they made, but way back when. And Chris told me later on that she had found Patrick and had interviewed him, and I might be interested in meeting him. And then I got a copy of the magazine, I read the article, and I called her up and asked her to give me his contact information. She did, and Patrick and I talked, and the next thing you know, I was up in Seattle, where Patrick lives, helping him with his Lavender Country concert. And pretty soon after that, I asked him to join the Out Band. And he toured with us a bit, and then we formed Pearl River.
In 2003, the Out Band decided to shift its style a little and to also change its name to Pearl River. I asked Doug about that evolution.
We wanted to play for more mainstream audiences. And, you know, Out Band is pretty obviously it's a gay band. So we decided we were going to come up with a different name. We were not necessarily going to do different music, but we were going to have a different name. So we could, hopefully it would be easier for us to get gigs at mainstream clubs. So we had several possible names, and we voted on them, and Pearl River won. And we decided at first that, you know, that maybe we weren't going to do gender-specific music. And I decided, okay, I won't do gender-specific music either. But then I started writing songs, and they were gender-specific. So that's what I do, I guess. So Pearl River, my songs are gay, but the other songs are non-gender-specific, except Patrick's songs. Patrick's songs are always told in, from the position of a woman to a man. And, of course, Patrick is singing the woman's role, so I don't know what you would call that.
And how is the sound different?
We decided to change our sound from a pop, kind of pop country sound, to a more Americana sound, or closer to bluegrass. Well, we got rid of the drums, so now we're a totally string band, and we worked very hard on our harmonies. It's much more old-timey country, or traditional country music, that kind of thing.
Well, we've got to hear a little of one of the songs by Pearl River, and I think my favorite is one called Aunt Alice. Here's Doug introducing it.
I have a song about my Aunt Alice, which is just about her. And at one point, one of the phrases in the song is, she was a honky-tonk angel with a pistol in her purse. And that really summarizes Aunt Alice.
Years ago, out of the sticks of Mississippi, a beautiful young woman did appear. She had grace, she had style, she drove them country boys wild. I wanted to grow up and be just like her. Ain't Alice, her 62 convertible Ford. Ain't Alice, slanging gravel down the road. Didn't have no tax, no driving license, and the law couldn't find her. I wanted to grow up and be just like her. Smoking Ceylons and drinking gin, dancing with all kinds of men. Mama said she was the black sheep of the family. Knee-high boots and a miniskirt. Man, oh man, she loved to flirt. She was a honky-tonk angel with a pistol in her purse. Ain't Alice, her 62 convertible Ford. Ain't Alice, slanging gravel down the road. Didn't have no tax, no driving license, and the law couldn't find her. I wanted to grow up and be just like her.
Now I've got one more song, but before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening, and to thank Patrick Haggerty and Doug Stevens for their interviews. It was really a treat for me to capture some of this important history and to share it with you. There was so much more of interest in both of their interviews that I could not possibly fit into this show. So I've uploaded them to my site, And that, of course, is at www.queermusicheritage.com. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. I said at the start of the show that this was the first of three special shows on queer country music. My April edition will be heard, as you might expect, on the fourth Monday of the month, and will continue the history and feature many of the more recent gay and lesbian country songs and artists. And I've got some that have never been released. You'll hear artists like Jamie Anderson, David Allen Moores, Y'all, Mark Weigel, The Top Twins, Jeff Miller, Lisa Koch, Mark Islam, Dina Kay, and of course the late, great Sid Spencer. I've got a lot to fit in, including some more special interviews. But in 2 weeks, I'm slipping in an extra show that I'm calling The Return of Big Bad Bruce, Homophobia in Country Music. This is where I explore all those comedy and novelty songs done by straight artists that have been making the most of gay stereotypes over the years. To end this show, I wanted a new song that has the feel of a queer country anthem. And while it's not been officially released, I think I've got it. I've admired the work of New York City artist Freddie Freeman for several years now, and he's also the founder of an annual music event called Barapalooza, which this year is on April 15th in Seattle. So far, this song has only been captured live. In fact, it was recorded at the last Barapalooza. Freddie has just moved to Nashville, and I'm looking forward to the music he'll create there. I thank him for sending me this demo recording of a song which I think is the fitting end to a show on the history of gay country music. Here's Freddie Freeman with I'm Here, I'm Queer, and I'm Country.
Disco and queer as folk. Those queer rock guys that make me wanna choke. I like an ice cold beer and a bluegrass band. I could do a little two-stepping with my man. He's a southern boy with a heart of gold. Gonna marry him and love him till we're gray and old. And I'm not just gonna disappear. I'm here, I'm queer, and I'm country. Throw out all your stereotypes, cause you can't use them to define my life. Maybe that cowboy standing next to you misses his man and his mama too. If you're proud, shout it out loud. I'm here, I'm queer, and I'm country. Guitar! Don't go put your chains on me, cause real life ain't like reality TV. Open your mind to diversity. We can have a barbecue, we can all be free. We can spend our time spreading more love, whether you're straight or bi or trans or queer, or rock and roll or rap or blues or country.